Rise and Climb with Anna, as I share stories of hope and healing through hardship to help you overcome the obstacles you face today. Whether you are a teen, single adult, parenting, or just simply learn best through stories, this podcast will keep you inspired to answer to the call to rise and climb to any occasion life throws at you. Enjoy.
There's one page in the book that the monsters are playing sports, and my son, he probably more than anything lights up. And that alone has been awesome to watch him just be so excited about a book. And I don't think he understands that that book is from me.
All right, everyone. This week, we are taking a little break from Michael in my love saga story. And we are interviewing one of my bosses, actually. He came out with a book this year, and I love it. It's centered around health. But during the interview, we kind of dove into some things about chiropractic and just his general health and wellness tips. And while I loved that, I decided that we are going to do a bonus episode that will air the following week. So this week is just all about writing a book, the process, and pretty fun. And then how he uses his faith that applies to his work and his family and what he's learned. So I hope that you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed the interview.
All right. So this morning I'm here with Dr. Boss, who actually is my boss, and said he'd give me a raise if I interviewed him and promoted his book. So
this interview's over. No. Thanks for having me on, Anna.
Yeah, so ultimately what prompted the interview is, I mean, Dr. Boss is great, he's very knowledgeable, has a lot to offer, but this past year he came out with a book, a children's book, Monsters Inside Me. We will put the link in the show notes. So we're going to get into that, but I kind of want to give the build-up to how that even would have come to fruition, because your life built up into it. So could you introduce yourself, let us get to know you a little bit?
A little bit about myself. I am a dad to three beautiful little kiddos. I'm married to my beautiful wife, Jess. I'm a chiropractor, an author, an artist, and I love Jesus. It's kind of like my Instagram bio.
So, what emojis do you have on there?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm not sure. But number one in my life is my faith in Jesus. We always want to put that out there. Number two, my wife, Jess. We've been married for 8 years now. And then again, we have three kiddos. So MJ is my oldest. She's 5 years old. Palmer is 2. And then we have a 2-month-old whose name is Cooper Lou. So they are little blessings and little stinkers. And then I'm a chiropractor in Appleton, Wisconsin. That is where I am originally from. And then an author of this little kid's book called The Monsters Inside of Me. It is a kid's guide to health. And then something I think worth mentioning is my life mission. Everything I do, I try to make sure it's towards this mission. And the mission is to spread health, happiness, and hope worldwide.
And I would say you do a very good job of that.
Well, thank you.
You're probably one of the nicest people I know.
Thank you.
So what kind of got you into chiropractic and health the way you are? I mean, you're not just a chiropractor. You and your wife and your family live a very healthy lifestyle, but it didn't always start that way, right? I know your mom. But what kind of sowed the seeds of that in your life?
I was definitely not always like very healthy or naturally healthy. I just, growing up, learning life and the ways of life and our bodies and everything, there's definitely a lot of lessons to be learned through that. But I've always been interested in health and wellness. My older sister is really the main reason why I got into it. So my older sister is Katie. At home, we always played, and you know, we did a lot of card games and board games, and she was a normal Midwestern kid to me. As far as I knew it, she's funny, she's awesome, smart. She kicked my butt all the time in card games, and I think I'm good at card games and board games. But then when we went to school, and throughout the years of school, she was always in more of like the special education classes. She just socially had struggled, and you could see that all the time with whether it was friends or getting picked on or those types of things. And it just really, I don't want to say like softened my heart, or is it hardened my heart?
Yeah.
Both. For watching her get picked on, it made me just, I wanted to protect her, but it really built this, just something in me that wanted to dive into health further and what makes her different from me and from everybody else. So, fast forward a few years later, she got diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. And that was pretty new at that time period. This was in the 80s. So then I started to learn more about that, and that kind of study and just curiosity opened doors to that want for healthcare and learning about our bodies. Today, Katie is just a beautiful mother. She's married. She works in her passion, which is helping babies and kids in daycare. And I truly think she's an angel and one of the kindest souls. Have you ever met her?
Yes. Yeah. So that's where you get it from.
Probably. Yeah. Probably. She is amazing. So I really owe all of like my journey and where I am to her.
Well, she's got good taste in names too. She named her daughter Anna.
That's true.
She can't be bad.
Yes. Yeah. So in college, I was pre-med and pre-dental and just didn't really know which direction I wanted to go. I took MCATs, took the DATs, and tested really well on them. But neither of my parents went to college. I didn't have a backing of, you know, a lot of students like that, or schools like that, backing of having parents that is already in the profession. So I got put on a wait list, and I remember being pretty bummed out after college. And then, but like looking back on it, it's such a total blessing of how it led to this. In that time span as well, one of my college buddies, who's now my business partner, Dr. Skiba, Tyler, he had the same kind of career path as me. We had the same classes, and he had bad heartburn and
acid reflux, I think.
Acid reflux, yeah. So somebody, and I think he was just kind of checking out different professions as well. Should I look into chiropractic? Never been to one. And I remember he went and got adjusted, and his heartburn went away immediately.
Yeah.
And so both of us were like, what? This is bizarre. but it, again, piqued that curiosity, looked into it further. And for me, it just kind of meshed with, I'm very entrepreneurial, which is a lot of chiropractors start their own business. So I like that aspect of it. But then the natural healthcare and all of those parts of being a chiropractor fit my mindset and where I was in life, just my philosophies with health and our body. So that's kind of what sparked getting into chiropractic care. And after we shadowed a bunch of different chiropractors, the lifestyle was way different than in a hospital. You know, where an MD would be many hours a week, nights, weekends, on call. In chiropractic, you don't see that much, which was way
lifestyle-wise,
way more interesting.
You can have a family, you can have a life, sure.
So then, between chiropractic school and the end of college, there was about a year span before we could actually start school. So I got a job in Madison at a pharmaceutical company, and I was testing pharmaceuticals. Unfortunately, I was in the animal testing part of the company. And that just further drove that passion of natural healthcare. There were studies where, I remember going to studies where I'm doing injections into the back of rats and mice. And I mean, like
thousands. Do you like rodents to begin with, or do they freak? They don't freak you out?
No.
Okay, so that didn't freak you out. But
it was weird.
Yeah.
I remember training, like, I picking up this mouse by the back and I was sticking a needle in it.
Yeah.
Bizarre. But there were studies where you go in and some of the rats, I mean, the whole study, I guess, where rats are just, every one of them was like lethargic and mm-hmm. could barely keep their eyes open.
Oh.
You just pick them up and they were really sweet that way.
Yeah.
Then you go into the next study and the rats were, as soon as you reach for the cage, they were trying to like bite your finger off. Oh. They were like raging.
Yeah.
And then you see both of these studies move on to the human trials. They like they pass that.
Oh.
And you just, it's...
Yeah, you're like worried about the studies they don't pass. It makes you think.
Yeah. So that was, it was a totally different world.
Yeah.
But I just feel like God put that in front of me to mm-hmm. just further instill this passion and this drive for helping people naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward to today, we've helped hundreds of thousands mm-hmm. of people in Appleton and the Fox Cities area. Just seeing people's lives change for the better every day mm-hmm. and just connecting with so many people. This profession is awesome.
Yeah. So then you started to get in the health more so for yourself. Cause I feel like chiropractic is a gateway for healthy eating, supplementation, exercise, but you really have taken that. You guys do CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
So you work out a little.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, so that, my guess is, kind of led, now you have kids. So it's not just about you and your wife being healthy. It's about living by example. So my guess is that kind of led into the book. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the book, The Monsters Inside of Me, A Kid's Guide to Health, was really inspired. The number one thing that inspired this is the direction of kids' health. Mm-hmm. It is declining very quickly, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, and every year the CDC releases new numbers that they're just getting worse. Right now, 1 in 5 children is obese, 1 in 6 have a developmental delay, 1 in 44 it has autism, and I think that number is even more than that now.
I think there's some projections that's 1 in 30, but yeah, between there, it's way too much.
1 in 6 has a mental health disorder, 1 in 8 has asthma. The rate of diabetes in kids doubled during the COVID pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, all according to the CDC. So these are, it's sad to see that. And
mm-hmm.
kids are our future. So how, if they're getting less healthy, where does that leave our countries and mm-hmm. our leadership and everything? So in practice, we try to teach families and parents and kids how to be proactive with their health and how to feel and listen to their bodies. They might not understand health stuff, but if they can listen to their body as they're going through high school and college, they'll be able to just better make health decisions
mm-hmm.
According to that alone. I mean, that's huge. But then also trying to teach kids, we've seen so many kids over the years that don't listen or
mm-hmm.
Just whatever it may be, there are so many different life circumstances and families and whatnot. They're not grasping health ideas and mm-hmm. watching them get less healthy over the years. It tugs at your heartstrings, and what makes me over those years, like, how can I help these kids? I feel like they're hopeless or mm-hmm. helpless. So that was a big aspect of it as well. And then, like you said, watching, especially my 5-year-old MJ, she'll pick up on my wife and I working out. We bring our kids to the gym with us all the time. And it's so important to have them see you.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we learn we shouldn't be like living life as do as I say, not as I do.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing we can do is be an example for our kids. Eating healthy, I mean, I probably harp way more than I should on sugar,
mm-hmm.
but I tell my kids that sugar is poison. It's horrible.
Sometimes they'll point at candy. They'll be like, what is that? I'm like, it's cancer.
Terrible.
They're like, it's Aki's. I guess it's Aki's. You don't even want to taste it.
Yeah. That is diabetes.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm drinking water mostly, eating better foods, getting adjusted. My kids have been adjusted since the day they were born, and having them, again, learn their body and understand that.
Can you speak to that a little? Because adjusting babies is intimidating to some people.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I trust in it. You had adjusted Benny in the hospital. So can you speak to that and why, just real quick?
Yeah, so it's people think, is my baby going to get cracked and popped, mm-hmm. which would be scary.
Yeah.
I totally see that, but that's not how it works. It's really gentle. Think of picking up a tomato and feeling how ripe it is. That's how much pressure we use on babies. Mm-hmm. The biggest benefit for all people, but you see it especially in babies and kids, is the parasympathetic response that happens in the body. So our nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, which is the part of the nervous system we can't control, that controls our body breathing and heart rate and, those types of things, is broken up into two parts. So there's sympathetic, which is fight or flight, mm-hmm. and then parasympathetic, which is rest and digest. You need a balance of both of those systems. This world, unfortunately, we're just bombarded with toxins and chemicals, even from before the baby's born. Mm-hmm. The birthing process is one of the most traumatic times all of us will ever have in our life. But again, they've changed that over the past 40 years, where the mom and the baby and there's just way more intervention than mm-hmm. there used to be, which includes, again, medicines. Sometimes it's needed, but a lot of times it's not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this plays into the baby's development and everything. But so there's way more meds are, even if they're needed, they're toxic. Mm-hmm. Sugars and processed foods, the blue light and phones and computers and TVs, and it's just like a constant bombardment of stress, mm-hmm. Starting out from before a baby's even born. Mm-hmm. So babies in coming into this world, the rates of ADHD and anxiety are skyrocketing as well, mm-hmm. because everybody gets stuck in that sympathetic, that fight or flight mode, and we can't get out of that. Mm-hmm. So one of the best things that we see, and it's awesome to watch kids that are colicky and just screaming or not sleeping well, mm-hmm. And again, not just babies, but even 5-year-old, 10-year-old, 15-year-old, when they get adjusted, you see in babies, you see the immediate parasympathetic response. They almost all of them poop right away. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that doesn't happen for any adults, but it's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And then as we get older, our bodies just take on so much more stress. You don't see that immediate response as much. But over time, with our bodies loosening and taking those stresses out of the joints and away from the spine and away from the nerves, you see more of a parasympathetic response and balancing, which is then less anxiety, less ADHD, better immune response. There's less allergy issues, and
parents say they get their kids back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really powerful.
Yeah.
So that's obviously the chiropractic realm. You impact lives every day. You're adjusting with that, and then Monsters Inside of Me came to hit kind of a different level and a different audience, the ones that you can't physically help. So what sparked the Monsters Inside of Me book or idea?
So the kind of what I listed before, the declining health in mm-hmm. kids was the biggest one. And then wondering how I can help so many other people with the kids that I see in practice, and then seeing my daughter pick up on our habits. Mm-hmm. Those were all little sparks that helped kind of initiate this. And I think one night I was reading a book to MJ, my daughter, for the 10,000th time, and trying to skip pages because I was tired and yeah. way past her bedtime. And she would stop me every time. We've yeah. all, most yeah. of us parents have been through that. She had the whole book memorized, mm-hmm. a lot of them just like that. And I was like, gosh, you know what? If kids can read a book about healthy lifestyles, or even just little tidbits here and there, and have the book memorized, they might not, again, pick this up, but it's a point in their life that it's at least ingraining something. Mm-hmm. And since this book came out, it's been really cool to hear parents listen to their kids about, would the bugs, the monsters in me, would they like that piece of pizza? Mm-hmm. And if, depending on the parents, like, they probably won't like that. Yeah. but it's cool to actually see kids picking up on it a little bit. So mm-hmm. it's just, a fun way to help instill some of those lifestyle habits.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where the idea came from.
So the idea came, then what happened? I mean, obviously, you put it to action. A lot of people have ideas. People might want to start a book. There's a lot of intimidating factors to it. Money, time, talent. So what was your biggest fear going into it, your biggest unknown, and what did you tackle first?
My biggest fear was probably just not being able to finish it, because mm-hmm. I knew that it was going to be a task going into it. Everything was unknown, because I had no idea what to do.
And you didn't really know a lot of people who wrote books before.
No.
So no. This is brand new to you.
I did self-publish like a tiny little, called a Sunday School Sillies book mm-hmm. for my wife, more so just to try it. Mm-hmm. And then give her a gift.
Yeah.
And she used to have some just really cool quotes from Sunday school that the kids would say.
Yeah.
And I just compiled all of those. So it's cool. And the book sold 2 copies that we bought.
Well, we'll put it in the show notes and it's going to blow up.
but that was my initial kind of introduction to it. So I had some ideas of where to mm-hmm. start and what to do with, but overall, from the start of this book to getting it published took 2 years.
Okay. So,
and that was a lot of work and time and devotion to it. But
and you have a busy practice. You're dedicated to your health and your family and your faith, and you have 2+ kiddos. So it's not like you had a lot of excuses on why you couldn't do it.
Yes, yeah. That's why I wake up at 3:45 every day. That was the time that I really hammered out a lot of it. I go to the gym at 4 in the morning usually, mm-hmm. come back, and then I have from 5 till 7 mm-hmm. before the kids wake up.
Yeah.
Typically.
And that's why you go to bed early, right?
Yes.
You try.
Not, I mean, 9-ish.
Yeah.
So it's not too bad, but... Yeah. So the process was very tedious.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I did was... Once I had the kind of words laid out and the manuscript all done, I sent probably hundreds of emails out to different illustrators.
And how'd you find them?
Just searching.
Okay.
Online,
children's illustration.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And I heard back from maybe 2, and one of them was the illustrator that I used, and he's out of London, and he works with Nickelodeon and a lot of... like big programs already, and he loved the idea of this healthy lifestyle, and we just meshed right away, yeah. and it worked awesome. So
in the beginning, did you know you would have to send it out to 100 people? At some point, were you like, what's the point? I mean, did you start off right away 100 people, or was it like 20, and then, how was that?
I did right away 100 people. Okay. I just figured the more...
You knew.
I assumed a lot of them would not want to... do the illustrations. Yeah. So I looked up a lot of their pictures that they mm-hmm. drew to find the ones that I felt meshed with the book yeah. more, and then the ones that I didn't even message.
Because my guess is you had a vision for what you kind of wanted. You're yep. an artist, so you could see that.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's where I started. And then he helped guide, found an editor in Florida. Really, one of my close patients, Rachel, she actually did the book design, so she used to do that for a company, and I found that out afterwards, and it worked out great to work with her.
Now, with these, with connecting with these people, did you have to have money up front? If somebody's looking to start, like, more a simple book, like, what would you say they have to be willing to invest, minimum? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, minimum to have, like, a decent book, but still minimal cost, mm-hmm. I would still think probably a couple $1,000s, $2,000 maybe. For me, it was a few thousand dollars, probably more than that.
Because you lack some talent.
Yes.
I, but you knew what you wanted, maybe a little more.
Yeah, my budget was like $3,000.
Okay.
If I can keep this under $3,000, I will be very happy. Mm-hmm. And then once I hit that mark, and I was like, I still need a lot of stuff to done that I just wanted to be really picky with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to really have a good product to give to people and and make it worthwhile. So then that's when I just kept seeking other people out. Somebody, the publishing company to help launch the book. You know, there's a cost to all of those little things for being a no-name author, and I didn't get a contract or anything.
Mm-hmm.
The book right now is actually being looked at for a bigger company, so hopefully sometime after this we see it published.
So that's the thing, is no matter where you start, you can always get picked up by somebody bigger and bigger and bigger. So that's how it works?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And then we launched in that first couple of weeks of launching in January of, was it, I think this year, it reached number 36 in the world, in whatever kid category it was, on Amazon. So that was really cool to see.
Yeah. So people want to get, so how did you decide where people can have access to the book? What were the options? What did you not want to go with? What did you go with?
I wanted everybody to have access to this. So I wanted anybody to be able to pick up the book and relate to it, which is why, unfortunately, why I left chiropractic out of it. It's basic healthy lifestyle habits. And I truly think chiropractic is one of the most important aspects of that. Of that, again, that parasympathetic, sympathetic balance. And just keeping the body moving, that we're made to move. But there's a huge percentage of the world that just does not understand chiropractic. And if they were to pick up the book and see that, they would set that book back down, unfortunately. So that I left that out. But
well, Monsters, Inc. has a sequel. Monsters Inside of Me has a sequel.
I've been thinking about that. So I might do a little spin-off and add chiropractic to it. Mm-hmm. Maybe do one that's more just nutrition, like how to pick certain foods. And
a lot of people come to me and say, oh, can you help my kid, you know, understand it? And nothing helps people understand things more than a parable or a story. Mm-hmm. So that's a great idea. Yeah. So you've got the book launched. You decided you wanted to have it accessible to everybody. So that's why you picked probably Amazon and your own website.
Yep. Amazon. It's accessible everywhere. Mm-hmm. Amazon, Walmart,
Barnes and Noble.
Barnes and Noble, every.
And how was that? Are you your own vendor or whatever with Walmart and that sort of thing? How did you make it accessible to Walmart? And Amazon, I think, is pretty self-explanatory. Barnes and Noble, did you have to go there and present it to somebody? Or how did that work?
So there's a company called Ingram Spark.
Okay.
And they're a printing company and a company that helps get books out there.
Okay.
They are the world's biggest book
distributor.
Okay. That's, so they have, as soon as your book is on Ingram Spark, you can pick to have it distributed anywhere or everywhere.
So why wouldn't you?
Yep.
Okay.
So that's how.
So they distribute it. So if they get an order, if Amazon wherever gets an order, it goes to Ingram Spark, and they release the copies.
Yes.
Maybe.
If
probably.
Yeah. Yep.
Something like that. So the major point is you're not sending out books to people every time there's an order.
No.
So that means they get a percentage. And so how did you decide what you were willing to, what was the give and take for somebody else distributing, et cetera?
For me, it's not, from the very beginning, I just didn't want to have money be a part of why I was doing it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really care. I mean, I wanted to get my money back would be my ultimate goal, and that's it. But I really didn't care about the percentages or anything.
Okay.
I just wanted to pick the best place to have it distributed, the best quality types of things versus cost.
Okay.
So, you know, there's just a small percentage I get back. And, you know, if this goes to the next publishing company, I would imagine they'll probably have offer like a contract and a bigger
type of percentage. And you can negotiate then at that level.
But again, that's not my main goal with this. And I made it where the proceeds will go to different like organizations that benefit kids' health.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, whatever proceeds there are, that's the main goal is to just keep helping kiddos.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Anything else that you would add to that journey? Publishing, getting a book out there.
It is tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
What is the toughest thing?
I think actually just a lot of people can create a book, but then getting the book to market is extremely hard, having different connections and marketing it, advertising, you know, social media blasts, and it's tough.
And you just, it's a marathon, that would be my guess, is people start off and they're excited and it's the sprint, then you got to find the why and really dig in to get to the end, would be my guess.
Yep. To keep a fire burning is really tough. Just being an entrepreneur myself, I've had so many ideas that I'm like on fire.
Yeah.
This is the best idea in the world. And 2 months later, like, oh, that was a dumb idea. Why did I think that? But to have a fire and then to keep that burning for an extended period of time is a difficult thing to do for most of us.
So anything else then you'd want to add? If somebody's thinking about publishing, what's the advice that you would give them?
I would say be persistent, you know, in your daily, daily activities of working on the book, you know, if it's 15 minutes or an hour, just try to dedicate that time, be persistent in connecting with, book illustrators or book companies or publishing companies, and just you're gonna get told no, and I think that's a big part of life. If you can get past all the no's and getting turned down, you will do well. But a lot of people get stopped at that first few no's, so keep just being persistent is the biggest thing.
So what is the feedback that you've gotten? What is your favorite feedback? Like the most rewarding thing you've heard back that you're like, yes, the 3:45 a.m. wake up calls are worth it. So glad I built this into my habits every day. What has been the most rewarding part now that it's all kind of out there?
There's one page in the book that the monsters are playing sports. And my son, he probably more than anything lights up. And that alone has been awesome to watch him just be so excited about a book. And I don't think he understands that book is from me and where it came from.
So that's good to know. You know, it's not like biased, like he has to pretend this is his favorite. So it is unfiltered.
Yep. And then I've had so many, again, a number of parents tell me now about how their kids are just understanding, will the little monsters inside my body like that? Do they want me to eat that? Or do they want me to, I know they want me to move and stretch. And hearing parents say that their kids are talking about it is awesome. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. It is a really fun book, fun pictures, fun colors. Anything looking back that you would have done different? I mean, it's easy to say.
Yeah.
Hindsight.
I probably will do another edition of this book and just take out some words.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, I had a professional editor go through it and fine-tune it. But now that it's out and I've reread it so many times, I would just kind of make it a little more concise and to the point, and I think that a lot of parents will appreciate that.
Bedtime. Yeah, and that makes sense. You grow. Anything else you want to add about the book?
I just hope everybody enjoys it. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you alluded off of that with faith. Obviously, you talked about your faith in Jesus Christ being number one. Was that always the case? Kind of give us a little backdrop of that and how you got to be with your faith today.
Yeah, I feel very lucky and fortunate to be raised in my family. My parents had us, my two sisters and I, in just a non-denominational church from when we were really little. And, you know, doing Bible verses, and it was never, like, pushy, and I never felt like that. But I remember middle school age is when I just really started to draw really close in my faith and could feel more of the Holy Spirit and other things. And that's when I actually, like, professed with my lips. I gave my life to Jesus. I think I was probably 13 or 14 years old. So I can't thank my parents enough for that. It's just awesome that to be raised in that type of a situation. So then having that foundation and that background, just looking back on my life going through college, I mean, I loved to party. I did not sleep well, and I did not eat well, and I did not drink water. There was a lot of water and beer, but I loved to party. And just getting pulled off that, you know, how life, we've all felt that, we'll pull you away. But through college, I still would attend church, not nearly as much, but I had that pull back, like that, from that foundation. And then through Cairo school as well, just really got back onto the path. And for me, like raising my kids, trying to build that foundation is one of the most important things.
Yeah.
Just because I have a really strong foundation, and I still got pulled away from it. So this world is tough to navigate. And now, just, you know, being in practice and seeing people and just being more appreciative of life situations, and I'm closer now, I think, than ever in my faith and that connection with God and my prayer and everything.
Yeah, it reminds me of the verse, is we aren't faithful. You know, He is faithful to us, and it kind of shows that grace that we can't be good enough on our own, you know, no matter what.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's for sure.
You know, a lot of people know religion, they know going to church, you know, that sort of thing. But what does your faith, like, every day look like? You talk about prayer, but what does that look like for you? It's a little different for everybody.
Yeah, so I'm very routine, and that's another part of, like, healthy lifestyles. And I think routine is important to have because, again, life, the day, if you don't get centered, your day can get pulled 100 different directions. Before you know it, you're trying to get the kids to bed, and I forgot to eat lunch and breakfast, and I'm so stressed and all this stuff. So for me, having that initial wake up, I work out, and then I pray, and I do my devotional, read the Bible, and I get centered for the day, and that just helps me keep kind of that focus while certain situations throughout the day try to pull me different directions.
And when you say, you know, I pray, do you kind of just sit down, bow your head? Is it journaling? Michael can think and pray. I can't do that. My mind gets distracted. So
I just have a conversation with God.
Yeah.
So I just talk. One of the men in my men's group, we went through, I think, this guy, he's a pastor, and they were supposed to watch a sermon from a different location church, and all the technology, like, went out.
Yeah.
So he went up on stage, and he just kind of was like, well, this is neat. What should we talk about?
Yeah.
And he, I'm sure he read it somewhere, but he went into praying and how to pray, and using the acronym P-R-A-Y. So pray is giving God praise. So thank you, you know, going to as much praise as you want. The R is repenting, and which is, we all should and need to do. A is ask.
Yeah.
And then Y is yield. So So even though I'm asking for my kids to be amazing and have a great day, yeah. and then when they're not, I'm I'm still being taught a lesson, whatever that may be, but yielding to whatever God's plans are.
Yeah. No, that's great and simple.
Yep.
People can.
So I kind of just go through a conversation and make sure I hit on those points and then, pray through for the day, kind of visualize the day as well.
Yeah. So that goes into being a father and a husband. I mean, you're a business owner. So I gave you the question of what have you learned through failure? Because we could, especially in this day and age, you know, people are like, oh, Buss's life is so great. You know, he published a book and some people might be feeling that, well, things just work out for you. But what have you learned from the things that haven't worked out and just having to get back up and recalibrate?
Yeah. I mean, it's great never failing. Life is awesome. I am totally kidding. I love failing, and I am trying to teach my kids that failing is, like, expected. It's part of life, and it's a great thing. Mm-hmm. Embrace failing, because that's what makes you grow. Pain is what makes you grow. If anybody visualizes my life like that or thinks my life is like that, I think of that iceberg analogy. If you picture an iceberg and the little tip of the iceberg sticking above the water, and that's the success, and you see that, that's what everybody sees. But underneath the giant part of the iceberg is all the hard work and the failing and the pain and tears and, you know, everything that just people don't see that part of it. I fail all the time to this day. Failing keeps your ego in check. I don't want to ever want pride to set in. So try to stay humble and keep that a quality of my life and part of my character. Failing is important. One of my biggest, I think, failures to date, there's a little regret with it too, but getting married, and if you're married, your priorities from pre-marriage to marriage have to change. Mm-hmm. And that's part of like working through that with your in that relationship. For me, I graduated Cairo school and opened up a practice right away, and shortly after that got married, and we were making no money at all, and I had $300,000 in student loan debt and business loan debt. So my mind is focused solely on getting
out of debt,
being successful, not failing in business. My priority list, I pushed the business and that part of our company and everything, I put that to the very top, even before God and everything. So that it was that, then it was probably a tie between God and my wife, and then, you know, other hobbies and other things after that. But it really strained my wife in that she felt that. She felt I was married more to my business than I was to her. I would stay out all the time late with, you know, networking meetings and dinners and meeting with other people. And even into having our first child, I was just coming out of this phase and still struggling with that priority order in my life. But I would, I don't want to say ditch her, but I would ditch her on many occasions to go and do stuff, prioritizing the business over her and her needs and our child's needs. So I know that left a deep scar. We've had conversations about it. And that's, again, just looking back on it, like, how could I, there's nothing more important than this moment right now, no matter where you're at in life, and God will always take care of us and protect us. How could I have done that to her? And MJ and look at our business probably would be where it is right now if I didn't do that. So, that's just a big failure you know, looking, cause it wasn't just one moment or one thing I did. You're looking at a span of years there.
Yeah.
And now that's why, like, now I number one prayer, like, I, again, God is first and foremost, and I have that connection. That's my, I make sure I get that in every day. But then it's, my wife is number two priority. Mm-hmm. So making sure, what can I help her with throughout the week or that day or whatever it may be. Make sure she's in a good just state for work or whatever it is with parenting. Then it's my kids, whatever they need. Then it's work. So when it took me, I just feel like, gosh, why couldn't I prioritize that mm-hmm. right when we got married?
Mm-hmm.
It would have been awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me 5 years plus to figure that order out. So again, there's many things that you can dive into that throughout that process of me trying to make amends with our relationship and changing things within the business and being a dad and other friends and family relationships. So, you know, again, I wish it was all rainbows and puppies, but it definitely is not.
Yeah, I think so many people think if I put this first, you know, then everything else will fall in line. But I, actually, a few years ago, I had to learn the same thing. It's God, husband, kids, and mission last. Like, for me, my mission was first, and I thought, you can just get distracted in doing good things and be so deceived. So I appreciate you sharing that example, because I don't think you're alone, especially for men. You want to provide. You think you are loving your wife by getting out of debt and providing. So I'm glad that you eventually, only 5 years, you know, could have taken 50. So she probably would have ditched before then.
Probably, yeah.
So what about kids then, have you learned with being a father?
My kids are beautiful, amazing little a-holes.
Selfish little a-holes.
They're awesome. So I think, you know, kids are our biggest teachers
mm-hmm.
of ourselves. They're a constant reminder for me of finding and living with the fruits of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I catch myself so many times just getting frustrated, or my daughter plays, I mean, she has me wrapped around her finger. So when I put her to bed, we switch every night. When I put my older daughter to bed, she can pull me in that room for, like, I'll try to leave. She'll keep pulling me back for an hour past her bedtime. Whereas my wife puts her down, she's says her prayers, says goodnight, maybe read a book,
mm-hmm.
out,
mm-hmm.
every time. But it gets, I know I need to put my foot down, but then I see her get upset and cry, and she knows what pulls at my heart and my buttons. But I start getting frustrated and angry, and I catch myself in those moments, and I don't want to be angry for something as little as that. But again, it's just that reminder of living with the fruits of the Spirit and trying to be patient and slow to anger and...
Mm-hmm.
And just continue to practice that.
Yeah. Yeah. My husband the other night, he told the kids, you know, that's enough. All done. We just sat there, you know, and before you know it, he was erupting at them. And I was like, yeah, because you let them, you know, and it was lazy parenting. So we had that issue the other day, and yeah, neither one of us want to be angry. You're right. But so it is, they are good teachers.
Yeah.
Well, where can they find Monsters Inside of Me? I know you said everywhere, but there's a website.
So I have a website that's just an easy way to get it. You can get the perk on the website is you can buy multiple books at discounted rate, whereas if you buy it anywhere else, you have to buy it at the regular book price. But the website is monstersinsideofme.com, and feel free to check it out.
And sign up for your mailing list for when edition 2 or the chiropractic one comes out.
Yes.
All right, well, thank you very much for your
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please give Rise and Climb a 5-star review or share it with someone you think who would equally enjoy it. If you also feel so led, you can support this podcast with either a one-time donation or monthly subscription to help pay for sound and editing equipment that helps produce more kingdom-driven and relevant-to-the-times content. God bless.